Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome back in. Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road. Let's go out live to Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park and hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel.
Average adjustment, but that always happens. And making sure that we're sound and that we, you know, our operation and our execution, substitution, all those things are good, and that give you a chance to at least execute the play.
With a new quarterback, you focus more on the Saints and the system that they've run, or do you go back and look at his tendencies from when he was the Raiders?
Well, I think probably with a veteran quarterback, there's probably going to be some concepts that, you know, Derek really likes, or that he's really comfortable with. But, you know, also I think that there's an element to what the Saints have done and will do. But I would imagine that there's some things that Derek's liked through his career that he would want to put in there.
I think Gibson was still a work in progress. We talked last time. Is that what do you like about him, and specifically maybe a 3-4 fit? What's good with him?
A work in progress. Well, I mean, I think it's just a veteran. It's a guy that's played in this league, who's produced in this league, you know, with a certain skill set, and how he develops or how he, you know, acclimates himself to our program and what we're doing. And as soon as he can determine a role, well, then we'll see where we go from there.
Bringing in a guy on defense make like that, make it being on defense make it easier for a guy to get up to speed since you're kind of chasing the quarterback and things like that?
Yeah, but there's also still responsibilities that you have to know and alignments that you have to understand. And, you know, whether you're working with somebody else or games and, you know, so if it was just a base rush and we just lined him up out there on one of the tackles, that would probably be easy to do. But then, you know, there's just a lot more, you know, things that he'll have to know here, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later.
What are you going to be looking at this week when
it
comes to deciding
if
he'll be ready?
Always how they respond in practice, and, you know, he'll do more today, and he's added more, you know, each day, I would say, since last week, and, you know, was diligent in his rehab and worked hard to get back. So, again, we have a little longer week. I have to be conscious that, you know, we're working our execution throughout the week, but also, you know, being mindful that it is a longer week and that we're ready to go for Sunday.
You said a couple weeks ago about covering kicks being the hardest thing. But you guys
blocking for him. The kickoff return. We can cover kicks. I could cover a kickoff.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Never
mind. You know what I mean? That blocking thing, right, where you're dropping back and guys are hauling 20 miles an hour at you. That's the hardest skill, you know, when you're dropping back and you have to, you know, turn around, plant, see R3 loop behind R4, you know, going to get him, backside block. You know, all those single blocks on the kickoff return is what's difficult and what shows up throughout the league, right? Whether it's missing a block or a holding call or any of those things. So that would be, to me, one of the tougher skills.
To be so good at the other side, is that, I don't want to say is there a frustration there, but don't you learn one from the other?
No, because it's a completely different, you know, spatial where these are linebackers and safeties, the majority of them. Sometimes there's a running back out there where you're going forward and you're attacking, and, you know, it's a covering a kickoff is like a 40-yard pass rush, right? You're trying not to lose, you know, speed. You're trying to stick and avoid, as opposed to now you're playing offensive linemen with a lot of different space and a fast player. So just because you can cover a kickoff, I wouldn't say that that necessarily translates to being able to do it. Now you have to rep it and understand, maybe understanding how the guy's going to try to avoid based on your leverage or where the kick is. You know, some of that may be able to help, but it's still getting it done without grabbing a guy or tackling him.
Is that what you like to pop up inside the five, putting the pressure on them to do something that's very difficult to do?
Well, if you can cover them. I mean, if you have confidence with your group and being able to cover kickoffs, certainly be able to pin them inside the 20. Every yard matters. Yeah, so we'll see how it goes.
You know what you've seen up to this point from your guys in practice and in the preseason. Now that it's game week, what do you want to see from this group this week?
Well, to continue to build momentum all the way up until the game through our energy that we show up with work today like we have so far, through our execution of practice. You know, that's what the whole goal is to continue to build momentum throughout the week.
For Jack and Aziz to not have Alvin out there for the Saints?
Well, for any of us. I mean, it's a matchup. You know, Mina's a talented player. Whether they run the football with him or throw it to him, create plays in space. Saw it all over the preseason when he played. Screens or option routes or vertical routes. And so I think that would fall on everybody.
Superdome is one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL. You, with this group, you haven't really done that, obviously, in the preseason. Are you just interested? How do you prepare them for it, and how much are you?
Well, we'll try to prepare for it and being able to, you know, handle the road environment week one, you know, with being excited to go out there and play, but also understanding that how we communicate and, you know, come off the football and work with somebody next to us and everybody's communication and the operation. So certainly will be important for us to practice it.
What do you tell, I guess, the first-year guys about the bump in intensity and heightened awareness on everything in week one? Or maybe from the preseason to the regular season, just the change?
We'll get there towards the end of the week. You know, I'll have conversations with them and, you know, those players will have different conversations with them.
Number two quarterback?
No, not yet.
How about captains, Mike?
Let you know tomorrow.
With the quarterbacks, just kind of what do you want to see in practice before making that decision?
You know, I think a lot of it is based on the game plan, you know, about how we feel like, you know, who would step in there and help us. And, you know, Will's been out a little bit, but excited to get him back this week and continue with Malik's maturity, and we'll kind of see where it goes at the end of the week.
So good on defense.
Well, they're sound. They have a very good scheme. They got very good players. They have veteran players that have continued to produce at a high level for a number of years. You know, Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, Honey Badger, Lattimore, you know, mixed in with some younger players. You know, Werner's, you know, excellent player. You know, Marcus May has been a very productive safety. So they put pressure on the quarterback. You know, DeMario does a great job on third down in that role, and Cam Jordan is constantly there. You know, Granderson and Turner, hard chargers, a lot of length on the outside. So they're sound, and they have the ability to put pressure on your quarterback.
You've got a guy like Dennis. He's a consistent track record of what he's done defensively over the years. Do you feel like you pretty much know what they're going to do, or when it's week one, do you also expect several wrinkles?
We'll see how the game evolves. I'm sure they'll have some things that they've wanted to add over the course of the offseason, but they have been very successful in what they do. Mixed coverages, and they're pretty proficient. Post-safety man, post-safety zone, split safety, so they you'll see all of those, and they do a nice job with them.
How much more well-suited is Aaron now and comfortable in the middle? And what's your kind of expectation for him as the pivot, kind of the center of the whole thing?
Well, I think he's very comfortable. I think that he's taken, you know, leadership role in that room and communicating up at the line of scrimmage and working with the quarterbacks. And, you know, I think that that's something that we expected, and, you know, hopefully we'll continue to be a great fit for him. Yeah, he hasn't kicked all that much. I mean, well, you know, again, I like what Nick is as a person and as a professional, and, you know, has a plan for how much he wants to kick as a veteran player that's, you know, kicked a lot in his career.
Harrell's history is not coming off the field a lot for you guys, but you got more numbers at that position. Do you anticipate trying to manage his snaps a little bit more, maybe as he comes back here? Or?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, right? I mean, I think that as we get more players that can rotate and sub in there and be, you know, productive, then I think that's something that could happen.
Lars, can you wear some of Derek Carr's strength?
Well, I think just his comfort level running the offense, his operation, decisiveness, knowing where to go with the football. He's athletic enough to avoid pass rush, but also scrambles to throw. You know? And so that's, you know, his ability to see the post-snap movement, rotation, know where he wants to go with the football and being decisive.
When you look back on it, did you learn anything from the past couple of years in your preparation for week one? And will you do anything at all different this week and try to be ready for week one?
It's just about being sound. I think it's about not chasing ghosts. Yeah, you can prepare for a lot of different things, but you also have to commit to something and practice it, and then also be willing to adjust and be ready to adjust based on what you're seeing and how the game's going.
Guys, good.
Thanks,
Mike.
Thanks,
Mike.
All right, that was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel kicking off week one here over at Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park. Titans taking on the Saints coming up on Sunday in week one. We'll get Joe's thoughts, his reaction to what Vrabel had to say there. Continue
boring
to the week one matchup coming up next.
I want Dion!
Yeah, get him in. Maybe he could be the offensive coordinator for the Titans.
I want more Dion! Sorry.
Mike, be more like Deion Sanders. We'll get into more of that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson, Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 102.5, The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Joe, riveting press conference from Mike Vrabel to kick things off in week one there. What were some of your takeaways? What did we learn about the Titans heading into their week one matchup against the Saints?
How much time do you have, Robbie? We got a lot to pick through there, a lot to unpack. Well, we learned that he's not going to say anything about QB2.
Yep.
I am intrigued. I think Malik Willis is QB2, but that'd be an easy thing to say right now too, right?
You would think. He did say that it kind of like a lot of it depends on like the game plan. So I wonder if that means it's a fluid situation as they go into each matchup on a weekly basis. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, and this is points been made. I mean, Jared's made this point. Others made this point. I mean, if you're thinking of it in terms of who can more easily step into the game plan that the Titans have for Ryan Tannehill, I think Will Levis is the answer. I mean, I think if Malik Willis is QB2 in terms of he's going to get a start ahead of Levis, then that game plan's different, and you can make the case to do that right now. But if you're strictly going with who could step in a pinch and basically the stuff we're doing with Tannehill, there'd be some different stuff in for Will. It doesn't mean that Levis can do the stuff better than him, though. You know,
right?
So, I mean, I'm right now assuming QB2 is Willis, but it is interesting, and the door is left cracked open. So we'll keep guessing at that. And already this week, we've talked about backup quarterbacks too much. So I'm starting. Yeah. We'll move on from that. I can't really, you know, no word. He's never, ever going to give any word on it. You got to ask a question, but he's never going to give the answer on like an injured guy. You know, their injury report comes out. Practice will tell you the story. The injury report will tell you the story. I think Burks will be fine. I think Burks is playing.
They'll tell you who's in or out on Friday. That's about it.
That's true. And then on Friday, you get the who are the inactives, Mike? Yeah. And he rips them off and off he goes. So other than that, I don't know. Did you find anything interesting?
I found it interesting. I mean, obviously, a lot of talk about kickoff coverage. So
yeah. I mean, that was interesting. Like, it was interesting football talk.
Yeah, nobody thinks that Nick Folk is ever going to be able to reach the end zone. So we'll see what happens on that front starting on Sunday. And then the Harold Landry thing of, you know, it is a good point. Like, when he's been healthy for the Titans, he's been on the field pretty much every snap. Are they going to do that again this year with him coming off the ACL? Will they have more of a rotation at the edge rusher with him coming off the ACL? But also not just him coming off the ACL, like, how much of a step do they feel like Rashad Weaver is taking? Is Caleb Murphy going to be active and get some reps at rushing the passer on Sunday? I don't know. Like, I'm interested to see what that looks like with Landry from a rotation standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. I think the most interesting, correct me if I'm missing something, but I think the most interesting injury question this week is Arden Key.
Agreed.
And if that calf is not going to allow him to go, maybe that a little bit speaks to the Trevis Gibson pickup.
Yeah.
As a sort of a stopgap kind of situation, which would also, if that's the case, kind of tells you they kept Caleb Murphy. Again, this is speculating, but it could be you're keeping Caleb Murphy because you actually, that is one of the guys. There's some, you know, there's people, including our friend Zach, who's like, just scream at people for thinking anybody's ever going to get picked up off waivers. And it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen.
Yeah.
And a guy like that, I think, is the kind of guy that people are like, okay, that's an actual pass rushing skill. Let's take a flyer. So it could be that, you know, they don't view Caleb Murphy as someone right now ready to help them, but they just felt like they had to have him on the 53, which would speak to maybe Gibson coming in, which might speak to Key not being available this week.
Right. Joe, I was going to save this for a rant later in the week, but I feel like we just got to talk about it now because you brought it up in the group text and I think we just got to get to it. So Chad Withrow comes out with a tweet about the atmosphere at the Tennessee game on Saturday at Nissan Stadium, which is, by the way, it was great atmosphere, looked like on TV, and they set a football record for attendance. So, I mean, it's not really all that surprising. Vols fans, we knew were going to show up. They did, and it was a great crowd, great environment at Nissan Stadium on Saturday. And Withrow's tweet was, when was the last time Nissan Stadium saw an atmosphere like this? This is what I hope for the Titans. And that generated a lot of reaction, including from Charlie Burris on X or Twitter, who is the host of the Big Orange Pod with Zach and Jonathan Crompton's on there. And like, I've seen those guys. They do a pretty good job with a lot of stuff that they do. But Charlie Burris tweeted this out, said over Withrow's tweet, and said, if the Titans would take even the smallest effort to pander to Tennessee fans, they could get more of this, talking about the atmosphere. Instead, they prefer to spit in our faces. This is what Charlie Burris had to say about the environment with the Titans as opposed to what we saw in Nissan Stadium from Vols fans. So that has generated a lot of reaction. Look, I think it might be one of the dumbest things I think I've ever seen. I don't know how the Titans have spit in the faces of Tennessee fans. And the more I read like interactions with this tweet, really it all goes back to the Levis draft pick. Like, that's what
is that really what it's about?
That's really what it's about. Like, it's about Tennessee fans that are really mad that the Titans drafted Will Levis.
Well, there's a lot. There actually is a lot to unpack with this. Okay. So first of all, Withrow, yes. Even like going to the stadium, I totally miscalculated. Like, because you can get to the Titans game 2 hours before, you're fine. And, you know, I mean, it's a good tailgating scene and everything, but dude, Knoxville was here. I'm like, oh man, I screwed this up. The tailgating was crazy outside that place. And I mean, it was a totally different parking situation. Granted, we were also in a different lot than normal, but So that's one thing. And then it was a fantastic atmosphere. Now, I will say to Withrow's original tweet, first of all, he said, when's the last time? Well, the Titans-Bengals playoff game, there was not an unoccupied seat, and it was a tremendous atmosphere. So,
and now, then the team screwed it up immediately. Yeah.
Yeah, the team screwed it up. But, I mean, it's not like it has never happened. It doesn't happen weekly. Like, I mean, even the Colts-Titans 2018 finale when Marcus couldn't go, night game, was fantastic. So there have been great atmospheres in there. But I also think it's just a little bit different when you're talking college and pro. Like, and that's part of why, even though pro football is the highest level of football, you have, like, it's part of why we love college football. Like, the fandom is a little bit different, man. It's just more passionate. I mean, and I know some NFL fans, like, I'm sure, like, Steelers fans or whoever are going to be like, yeah, no, that's not true. There's some NFL fan bases that are like college fan bases, but I think most of them are not to the level of like a Vols fan base. Okay.
Yeah.
That's one point I'd make. The other point I'd make is, yeah, I assumed that Charlie was talking something about maybe outreach or something, but if you think that if a professional team ever makes a draft pick, because a local kid or whatever, fire everybody. You're trying to win. Now, Levis may be a bad pick, but, like, come on. You cannot ever think in those terms. So if that's what he meant, I mean, I can't. That's crazy, man. That's silly.
Well, it's just stupid. And, like, this idea that, you know, that the Vols should be – a lot of people in the mentions brought up Trey Smith, like not drafting Trey Smith.
They should have. They should help themselves.
I mean, yeah, yes. There's no question, but they shouldn't have drafted him because he was from Tennessee. Like,
no.
They should have drafted him because he was a good player. But, I mean, a lot of people missed the boat on Trey Smith, and then he ends up going in the sixth round, and he's going to be a starter for Kansas City and win probably a couple more Super Bowls. Like, it's what it is. So a lot of people missed the boat on Trey Smith. But, like, this idea, like, I can't get over, like, the spit in the faces of Tennessee fans. Like, what does that even mean? Like, what have the Titans done to spit in the faces of Vols fans? Like, I don't even comprehend what that looks like.
So is he actually – because I haven't gone on the rabbit hole, and I don't think I want to. But is he actually saying, in responses, like, it's about Levis?
No, he's not saying that, but it's about Levis. I can read between the lines. It's about Levis with a lot of Tennessee fans.
Because that's the other thing is I need to understand what else would be at issue with that. You know what I mean? Like, what else would be – an issue of how the Titans go about their business. I mean,
I mean, look, I will say, I think for a long time, the Titans, especially because when they first got here, they were really successful right off the bat. And it was the NFL, the new NFL team in town. They went to the Super Bowl the first year they were the Titans in the new stadium. I do think there was somewhat of a level of arrogance over there for a long time that they just didn't really have to try all that hard. Like, they didn't have to. They didn't have to reach out. They didn't have to change up their game day experience. They didn't have to do all those things. And we talked about that when things got really bad around here, when Ken Wisenhunt was the coach and nobody wanted to go to the games. And I think the Titans, to their credit, have adjusted and have been way better at those type of things basically since Amy Adams Strunk has taken over as controlling owner. But I do think for a while they were really missing the boat on a lot of that.
But that doesn't have anything to do with UT. That's in general. With UT.
Like, it's just...
Yeah.
I just think it's an asinine take.
Yeah. So Big Orange Mac, friend of the show. So, and I saw that there was like I saw Mike Herndon and like Easton and some of those guys kind of, I saw some tweets about this, like quote tweeting it. So that's, I think that's how I found out about it. It was maybe like a Herndon quote tweet. But Big Orange Mac says, I have nothing against the Titans. Matter of fact, they're my side hoe NFL team. But these transplant beat writers for the Titans don't understand and can't fathom that a flagship university of the state is just as popular as the pro franchise. I said, to him, I said, I'm a transplant. I've never thought the Titans were as popular as the Vols in this state, because they aren't. The Vols, we should all be able to agree on that. In the state of Tennessee, Tennessee Volunteers football is the most followed team. They have the most fans, the most passion. I don't think there's any argument at all. There's no data available that you could show me, because it doesn't exist, to refute that. So, and that's the thing. Like, it's just, I mean, look, you're still talking about a pretty new NFL franchise, quarter century. And so I don't think there's any illusions about that, right?
I don't think so.
Are there?
But I don't understand this idea that, like, Tennessee fans have somehow been aggrieved by the Tennessee Titans. Like, it makes no sense to me.
Yeah, if anybody out there feels that way, like, do they need, like, should they, you know, wear some orange sweatbands? You know, a little bit, throw a little orange in for your game day experience.
You know the play Titans, some. At one point, they drafted Derrick Henry. I'm sure Vols fans probably didn't like that. And then Derrick Henry turned out to be pretty darn good, didn't he? Worked out pretty well.
Slap in the face. I'm trying to think, who should they have, what Tennessee player should they have drafted instead? That was right before Kamara came out. So
yeah, I don't know. Dobbs.
Yeah,
go get him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, like, that's totally like a Detroit Lions thing to do. Is like, hey, let's get the Michigan or Michigan State kid in here. I mean, that, yeah, you
it's
have
a
no
very
chance.
Good way to guarantee you're going to lose. Like, it's a very good way to do that.
I mean, you can't even ever think in those terms.
But I think a lot of this with Tennessee fans is they drafted Levis and not Hooker. Like, that's what it is.
Yeah, okay. I mean, like, I totally get if you're a Vols fan thinking he's going to stink because he stunk against your team and not liking him, because if you're the other team, he's not likable. But, like, how is that – if that's what you're thinking is spitting in your face, like, how could you expect a pro franchise to go about its business with that ever in mind?
We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. We'll get into some college football, including Tennessee's performance against Virginia, coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Nashville Sports and Social, the most epic sports watching experience in town, is opening at the Mall at Green Hills this Thursday for the first NFL game of the season. Plus, Stillman & Company will be broadcasting live on location from 2 to 6. Sports and Social features a massive state-of-the-art 33-foot LED screen, their world-famous menu, and signature curated cocktails. That's this Thursday, the grand opening of Sports and Social at the Mall at Green Hills as the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs take on the Detroit Lions. What a matchup. In week one, that's going to be Joe. I know that I can feel the excitement, the palpitation running through your veins right now.
Yeah, yeah. Can't wait. Believe me, I am excited because the laughter Friday morning will be probably a little bit overwhelming for people. I'll say this, too, on that front. Check out we may have to have Nick Baumgartner on this week because he wrote a piece on the Lions. It's actually really good. He wrote about the history of the awfulness of ownership and how – it has turned around, you know. Sheila Ford Hamp, who is William Clay Ford's daughter, it's kind of an Amy Adams Strunk kind of story in terms of, like, a sibling who takes over the franchise and appears to be a competent. So anyway, it's worth checking out, Robbie. I'll be interested to hear what you think of it. And it's a great thought, and there's some compelling evidence, and they're still going to completely poop their pants. Thank you.
It's going to be quite entertaining to watch coming up on Thursday. Joe, the Vols get it done 49-13 against Virginia on Saturday at Nissan Stadium. Joe Milton, 21 of 30, 201 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, another 2 on the ground for Milton. Dylan Sampson, 4 total touchdowns on the day, 3 on the ground, 1 through the air. Tennessee's defense was stifling pretty much all day against Virginia. There were some slow spurts with the offense. Really, the first half outside of the first drive wasn't very good. Offensively for Tennessee, they did have a massive edge in terms of the yardage and a big missed opportunity in the first half. Great pass from Joe Milton. Ramel Keaton just drops it on what would have been, I don't know, 70, 75-yard touchdown for the Vols on that play. So missed opportunities. D. Williams fumbles it on a punt return as well. Watching Mike Eckler while all this is going on the sidelines was one of my favorite things to do on Saturday with each passing special teams play. But overall, 49-13, the Vols get it done. They cover the spread. What did you take away from Tennessee's performance against Virginia on Saturday at Nissan Stadium?
I really like what I saw for most of the day from most aspects of the defense. And I understand that Virginia, you're talking, you know, I'm texting with John Glenn during the game, and I'm like, hey, this quarterback, you know, the Monmouth transfer. Monmouth transfer, great. You know, he's not excited, and Virginia's not good. And the Vols are going to see much better offenses in this, but the way they close ground, the way they swarm, the depth, the speed, the athleticism, it's a higher level of potential for their defense this year. I absolutely believe that. And I even like most of what I saw in the secondary. You know, not perfect, and there's still a chance for that secondary to get picked on by some teams that are on the schedule.
It'd be great if at some point Kamal Haddon could turn his head around in coverage. That'd be awesome.
Gotta get that head around and play the ball in the air downfield. You know, that's something that, I mean, you can go back. What did Big Orange Mac say? The Kingsford NIL deal?
Is that yes.
For the balls? I mean, you got to keep that in mind. But, I mean, James Pierce, you know, UVA, you can't leave the right tackle on him alone anymore after, like, the one time, and they did. But he had an inside little swim move. It was like, oh, boy, that guy is a year in the weight room. And, Barron with a couple sacks. And there's a lot of – I mean, Joe Milton, like SEC Media Days – Joe Milton, because I followed him the whole day, so there was a million questions, all the same questions that I heard that day from him. And I saw, like, every time he was asked about who stands out to him, he's Tyler Barron. And we've known Tyler Barron's a good player. That's the type of game that maybe starts Tyler Barron thinking a little bit more about Sundays, you know? I mean, yep. He could have a big year. I think the defense is better, and I think the offense is worse. How much worse? I don't know. Is it possible it could be better in some ways? I mean, Jalen Wright, I think, could be the best running back at Tennessee in a while, because he is putting it together, man. He looked really good. I think the receivers are going to be fine. Didn't have their best day. And Milton's going to be fine. But, you know, you're going to have to be great on some of these days. So it's a slow build for him. I thought overall it was a pretty encouraging first performance for him.
Yeah, I thought it was too. I mean, he had one drive where he had three awful throws. I mean, right in a row, he missed a comeback route. He overthrew, I think it was Keaton over the middle on the third down play. He had one drive that was terrible. Other than that, I thought he was pretty good for the most part. I mean, he ends up 21 to 30, 201 yards, two touchdowns. Like I said, adds a couple more on the ground. Impressive stiff arm, by the way. Flat-footed stiff arm, somebody to their back, and then fell forward another 4 yards. That was fun to watch. But yeah, I mean, I said this earlier in the show. I didn't feel like Heupel and the Tennessee offensive staff really dialed much up from a passing standpoint. I mean, they ran the ball 52 times, and some of that's a product of the score. Some of that is because they were having a lot of success doing it. I mean, they were averaging 5.5 a carry. They ended up with almost 300 yards on the ground. And I didn't feel like they really took a lot of shots in the passing game. So, and that's going to change as they move forward. But, like, Those three guys who I think are clearly the starting three receivers, Keaton, White, and McCoy, what is that going to look like as they move forward? By the way, Squirrel White got hurt in the game, and he didn't come back. Josh Heupel just said a few minutes ago that Squirrel White is okay. He just didn't come back in because the score was lopsided. So good news on that front if you're a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, I thought after watching him get up and run, like, okay, that was just a shot that took his breath away. So, but good to hear Heupel confirm that. You know, Deontay Thornton was one of my big questions in that game. Is he just a talented backup? I think he's going to be out there situationally. Like, I think you've got to use that speed some. But, you know, Ramel Keaton, who I still believe that's the snaps that get lost to Thornton if it happens and they move people around. You can't drop the deep shot for sure. He had the biggest play of the day later on another deep shot from Joe Milton. But I was curious about Deontay Thornton, and I still wonder if there's a need to try to get him out there a little bit more.
The special teams was a little bit concerning from Tennessee from the standpoint of, I mean, the field goal kicking was fine, and D. Williams did respond after fumbling a punt. He had a couple of nice returns in that game. He's a good punt returner, so I think he's going to be fine as they move forward here. The actual punting of the football and kicking off, they kicked a couple out of bounds and they had a couple of shanks punting the ball. They got to get that part of it figured out. It's not going to hurt you against Virginia, but when your margin for error against maybe a Texas A&M or a Kentucky or certainly an Alabama or a Georgia, you can't be punting the ball off the side of your foot and kicking the ball out of bounds on kickoffs if you're Tennessee.
Yeah, and there was a lot of excitement about Jackson Ross coming out of Melbourne, Australia. A lot of Australian punters finding their way to American football. So Josh Heupel kind of set up first game for a guy in a new country. You know, he had a couple. They were real shaky. I mean, they were almost like straight right punts. like, man, this field is not nearly that wide. I don't know what Australian rules football fields look like, but look at that bound. Look at that out of bounds line, but finished better. So that is important. The punt, very important. And yeah, kickoffs. It was, you know, there's a lot of, there was some stuff up front with the offensive line too, with some mistakes that, like, you know, you can easily clean up. A lot of it is correctable, as I like to say. So I didn't think there's anything terribly alarming right now with the Vols. And frankly, coming out of the weekend, I look at some of their opponents and I'm like, man, they might be cruising for a while here.
Well, we're going to get into some of that coming up next. We'll take a look at week one of college football. We'll get into Vanderbilt, their performance against Alabama A&M, all that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, by the way, back at the normal time tomorrow, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Make sure you check that out here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Take a look at college football. I know, right? It felt good to sleep in today. Tennessee wins 49-13 over Virginia. Joe Vanderbilt takes down Alabama A&M as well to improve to 2-0 on the season. What were your takeaways for Vanderbilt and their win on Saturday to improve to 2-0?
Well, it was a pretty slow start, and I'd say a pretty discouraging first half and into the second half. They give up a deep shot, and I think that makes it 19-10. And it's just like, ooh, man, all around, pretty underwhelming performance. Then they got rolling a little bit. Yeah, I think A.J. Swan had a rough, probably maybe the roughest half of football I've seen from him. I think that is probably true. Just some decision-making that you got to clean up, that he bounced back. I thought, you know, the overall performance finished strong. Now you got an FCS kind of overmatched opponent, and late in the game sometimes you wear a team like that out. But look, they played better, and so they have some momentum. But I would say that this performance and the first performance make me less optimistic for Vanderbilt going to Wake Forest right now than I was before the season started. And that's not much of a commentary on Wake Forest. I don't know how much we can take from the win over Elon. We know their superstar quarterback is now trying to make his own little Heisman noise up there in South Bend. You know, put some big plays on TSU, which was an awesome scene, by the way. TSU up at Notre Dame this last weekend. Gentry Estes had a really cool story, by the way, in the Tennessean about that. But I'm definitely concerned about Vanderbilt. The offensive line still, it's got to take a step for sure. Swan has got to be really good and take care of the ball this weekend. The defense just hasn't been as dominant as I thought against these two opponents. Which, to me, it's like you dominate opponents like this so that to kind of demonstrate you can hang in a little closer with some of these better teams on the schedule. So we'll see. But there's a lot to improve on, and we're going to see if they can be competitive. You got two road games here, Wake Forest, UNLV. You're going to harbor any bowl hopes before you get to the SEC play. I think you have to at least split these games.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, 3-1 is probably worst case that you can be coming out of non-conference play if you want to get to a bowl game. And I would say Vanderbilt probably a little bit behind at this point in the season where I thought they would be. And we'll see how much ground they can make up as they take on Wake Forest on the road. By the way, I just looked. Wake Forest, 11-point favorite at home. So a double-digit point favorite for Wake Forest at home.
That's down. I saw somebody that I thought had it at 13, but interesting. Yeah, I mean, I still think Vanderbilt has the ingredients here to be competitive in that game, have a chance to win it. It starts with, I mean, you got to be competitive up front, and you got to be really good at quarterback. AJ Swan's got to have a big day. Cedric Alexander, the freshman running back, certainly the hurdle and some of his runs were very encouraging. He's a talent, and we may have seen a little bit more emergence of him as one of the key guys. I think Patrick Smith and Cedric Alexander as a tandem could be pretty decent.
Yep, absolutely. So We're going to find out a lot more about Vanderbilt coming up on Saturday against Wake Forest, and we'll see how that goes. Joe, some other news in week one of college football. We've talked about it a couple of times today, but Colorado taking down TCU, 45-42, the final score. Shedeur Sanders, 510 yards. Travis Hunter playing over 100 snaps on Saturday, both on the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball. He has over 100 yards receiving, makes a huge interception in the game at corner. That was a heck of a game to watch to kick things off for this college football season on Saturday between Colorado and TCU. Now Colorado hosting Nebraska coming up this weekend in their home opener, and they're a 2.5-point favorite.
Just amazing. I mean, what a story. I just blown away. And I absolutely thought TCU would win that game going away and that this year would be probably pretty ugly for Deion, which wouldn't necessarily mean he couldn't get it done there. But, you know, it just, you got some good skill guys you bring in, but there's so many questions with so many other aspects of the team, and they come out and win that game. Incredible, man. Incredible story. I am absolutely all in on Colorado football. I mean, I may have to go get, you know, speaking of, you know, Art, do you believe? Yes, Deion, I believe.
That's right.
Becoming a big Buffs fan here in Nashville. But in all seriousness, he is impressive. And I'm sorry, but he is getting it done, and it's something else. It's something to behold. I mean, he's got, to me, the top two Heisman candidates right now in college football after 1 week. And Travis Hunter is, my goodness. What a freak he is. But what if Travis Hunter was playing for Florida State last night?
Man.
And here's another what if, Robbie. What if LSU would have not botched those early opportunities and would have ended up winning that game? How many Deion Sanders, like, bring Deion to Tallahassee, like, screams would there be right now? Like, the first time Norvell loses this year, it's like, please, go get Deion. You got to go get Deion. It has to be Deion, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, there's going to be that. And, you know, a lot of that depends on where Colorado goes from here. But I saw enough out of Colorado Saturday to make me believe they're going to win some games this year. And, like, I don't think they're going, you know, 10-2 or they're going to be some threat for the college football playoff or anything like that. But I think they're going to win some more games this year. And I think they're going to – I mean, they've already in some ways kind of exceeded what we thought they could be this year based on who they just beat. Yes. But, you know – I don't think there's some national power all of a sudden, but he's, I think, pretty clearly, Joe, you know, regardless of what you think about the tactics, and people have varying opinions on those, on how he's kind of built this program and how he's approached the roster this year. Like, it's pretty clear. Number one, I think he's a good coach. And number two, the kids buy into whatever he's selling with them. And it's become clear both at Jackson State, which is a lower level of football, obviously, and now at the Power Five level at Colorado.
Hey, man, he motivates them. And I mean, that the passion of that pregame speech was, I didn't think that was BS. I was like, man, that's the best speech I've heard in a while. Cause I didn't think it was like just some script, you know, like he was just kind of letting it rip and he got them going. So, hey, that stuff works. You know, here's a tweet that I found interesting. I'd like to get your thoughts on it because you and I both love NFL and college football. Correct. But Ari Wasserman, there's people who love one or the other. Ari Wasserman is very much a college friend of the show, very much a college football guy and non-NFL guy. But he had a tweet, and he's like, I don't know how anybody, and I'm just paraphrasing, but like, I don't know how anybody can watch this Colorado TCU game and how much fun it is and prefer the NFL to this. And I, like, there is something to that. Like, that, the wildness of that game and just the plays, it's imperfect and it's kids and not professionals. But that is part of why college football is great, right? Is games like that. You just don't quite have that in the NFL.
Agreed. I love the NFL. I love college football. College football outside of probably the NHL is my first love in sports. So, like, I'm a college football guy over an NFL guy. Having said that, I mean, I love both. They're different. And that's why, like, some of these attempts to make it more,
you want
like
them
NFL
to stay different,
piss me off. Like, I'll be honest with you, through week one, I'm already starting to get pissed off about the clock not stopping and the thousands of commercials that are now in the game at that point. So, like, I like college football being different than the NFL. Like, I tried explaining that because I've had people go the other way. Like, how could you ever watch college football when they're not as good as the NFL? I'm like, it's just different, man. Like, the NFL, in some ways, they're too good and they don't make like mistakes. And it's not as wild as it is in college football. It's hard to explain.
Well, it is. And I think it's like Ubben has done a good job explaining it. Like, the schematic variety is a big thing, too. You just see more creativity and different kinds of things that people would never do in the NFL. In college, although it has, to me, this is where the NFL has gotten better. Is some of the concepts going to the NFL. And I think it's a more fun product to watch than it was a few years ago.
Yeah. It's
because awesome. Of college football. Thank you, college football.
Yes. Thank you, college football. We appreciate it. But yeah, it's going to be awesome to watch what Colorado does from here. And they've certainly got people's attention. What'd you make of LSU getting blasted by Florida State in the second half last night?
Yeah, well, there's a good – so Nick sent this in our – this is a really interesting stat from ESPN Stats and Info. Brian Kelly, the third most losses by 20 or more points as the head coach of an AP top five team. He has five of those losses in 37 games as a coaching an AP top five team. The only coaches with more, Joe Paterno, Woody Hayes, both at more than 100 games to lose more like that. So that's interesting. He's definitely had some – well, now he wasn't ranked in the top five, but think about last year what the Vols did going down in Baton Rouge.
He was perennially overrated at Notre Dame, so that's probably where a few of those came from.
I'll say this about Brian Kelly. He's very good. He's always been a very good coach, and he's won – I mean, he won national championship at Grand Valley, got Notre Dame to the title game. I don't know exactly what is going to happen at LSU. You know, I don't know. Yep. That was a really discouraging half of football if you're an LSU fan, because it was, you should have been ahead by multiple scores. You botched that, and you can look at Brian Kelly in part. Yep. And then you got dominated in the second half, just trucked. So I don't know what that means. It might mean that your SEC West pick may be wrong.
May just be total garbage right from the start, or Florida State's an absolute powerhouse. One of the two.
Well, and here's the thing. Look at Florida State's schedule.
I know.
I mean, Florida State now is cruising to, and I don't know. I don't have it in front of me if Clemson is home or away, but Florida State is, they're going to have an easy time with a lot of weeks. Keon Coleman, former Michigan State receiver. Boy, did they miss him up in Michigan State. That guy is a stud.
Yeah. I mean, the schedule the next few weeks for them is just, they've got Southern Miss, Boston College. They do have Clemson on the road at the end of this month, September 23rd. So that one could be a doozy.
Okay. Now I'm excited about that one. That's going to be a heck of a week of football right there.
By the way, Clemson plays tonight, so we'll get our look at Cade Klubnik and what he looks like. First time he's going to be in game action since the Orange Bowl. Clemson and Duke tonight at the Labor Day night matchup.
Yeah, let's see if they can, after driving to the red zone, score any points at all in this game. That was amazing. Between the 20 superstars against the Vols, and then just found a way to screw it up.
Kicking was not great in that game for them either, so we'll see if that's gotten any better. BT Potter no longer there. He is, I don't know if he even made the team in the NFL. I think he was in camp somewhere, but we'll see what happens on that front. Joe, we're going to be back 6 a.m. tomorrow, so I hope you got your beauty sleep today.
There may have to be a little bit of a nap today, but then when I wake up, I'm going to play that Dion pregame speech to get myself pumped up for the rest of the day.
That's
Coach Prime, baby.
Robbie and Rex Road, 6 a.m. tomorrow. We'll catch you then. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are 2/4 of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.